We have case number 19-3544, United States v. Belial. Mr. Golubitsky and is it Ms. or Ms. Edwards?
Ms. Edwards.
Ms. Edwards, okay, thank you. Sorry if we're not together in person. Mr. Golubitsky, whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Your Honor. This is Alex Golubitsky. May it please the Court. I'd like to reserve 5 minutes of my argument for rebuttal time, if that's acceptable.
That's fine. Let me open with one question.
Sure.
Just, we got some factual questions that I think a number of us have.
Okay.
Now, you've only worked with the DeRusso firm on a few select matters. Is that correct?
Well, I would say not from my perspective, Your Honor. From my perspective, I work with Attorney DeRusso on every piece of litigation that I am personally involved with, except for this matter, and because of the order of the district court, and what I would characterize to be a very small breach of contract matter in Virgin Islands Superior Court. Outside of that, every other case that I litigate, I work with Attorney DeRusso on.
And do those relate to your company?
Yes, Your Honor, that's correct.
Okay. Judge Greenaway had a question.
Yeah. Thank you, Judge Ambrose. Just a follow-up on that. In the record, it appeared at the time that it may be different now because the record was October 30th and 31st of last year. But as of that time, there were four pieces of litigation. Is that correct?
I believe it was either four or five at that time, Your Honor, but in that order, Matt, yeah, on that order, correct, yeah.
Okay, so I just want to understand if I might question a little further on this. Now, you're in-house counsel for a corporation, and how do you pronounce it?
It's Brisa Max. It's actually misspelled in the district court record. The first word is Brisa, B-R-I-S-A. The second word is Max. And then the third word is Holdings, V-I-L-L-C is the full name of the company. We call it Brisa Max.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you. So if I understand, you're a full-time employee with Brisa Max. That's correct, yeah?
Yes, Your Honor. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And that company generates all sorts of legal matters which you handle.
Is that right? Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. And of those matters, litigation matters, you refer out to the DeRusso firm. Is that right?
Yes, Your Honor. So the overwhelming majority of my duties as in-house counsel don't involve litigation. I would say probably 20 to 30% of my time is spent on litigation writ large. For the litigation matters that we have in the United States, or I should say outside of the United States, Virgin Islands, they're referred out to various outside counsel depending on expertise. For virtually every piece of litigation in the Virgin Islands, in general, I do appear in those cases. But as I indicated, on all of those matters except for one, Attorney DeRusso also works with me and also represents the company Brisa Max.
Okay. So I take it like any litigation matter, there are attorney's fees that are generated, yeah?
Yes, Your Honor, that's correct.
Okay. And am I correct if I assume that Brisa Max pays attorney's fees to Attorney DeRusso?
That is correct,
Or the firm, yeah. Okay. And am I also correct if I assume that because you're in-house counsel at Brisa Max, when there are fees generated by the firm or by the work of Mr. DeRusso, you do not receive any of those fees. Is that correct?
Just to clarify, what you're asking is if the fees – that are paid, if I receive any of the fees that are paid to Attorney DeRusso for his services to Brisa Max, is that correct?
Yes.
No, I do not receive any of those fees, Your Honor. That's right.
Okay. And so In your role as outside counsel with the firm, as I understand it, right, from the record, do you receive any remuneration from either Mr. DeRuza or the law firm for services rendered?
Well, currently, no. Prior to when I began my role as in-house counsel, I was actually of counsel with Attorney DeRuzzo's firm, I think from October probably of 2017 through maybe June of 2018. So when I had the same title at that time, but during that period, I did receive remuneration from Attorney DeRuzzo's firm. But currently I do not. So I just want to make that clarification.
No, and I appreciate that. So if we could just focus on the time period that's relevant to this litigation.
Okay.
You're right. So you're appointed your in-house counsel, yes?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. And you make your initial motion. There's a hiatus, and in September, you make a second motion, and I understand that the focus of the second motion different than the first. I'm not getting into the substance right now, but during that time period that I've just outlined, you were in-house. Is that correct?
That is correct, Your Honor, yes.
Okay, and then in September, and I know the dates are close together, but in September, you take on a moniker of counsel to the firm, and then you make a second motion. Is that right?
Well, I made a motion. Technically, it was the third motion to withdraw, but yes,
okay.
I did make a third motion.
Fine. I stand corrected. Thank you very much for that. But throughout this entire time until September, you're in-house counsel, and you continue to be in-house counsel afterwards, right? And, in fact, you're in-house counsel now.
That is correct, Your Honor, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, and from this period of time when you first were appointed by Judge Gomez until now, you've received no remuneration for any of the cases that you've brought to the DeRuzzo firm. You've received no remuneration from the firm. Is that right?
That is correct, Your Honor, with one caveat that there is a one case that I'm working on with Attorney DeRuzzo that may involve future remuneration directly to me from the DeRuzzo firm, but there has not been any current remuneration from that case up to the present date, and including the time period you're referring to.
One moment, please. I don't have any further points on that particular point, Judge Ambrose.
Yeah, the question I have, just as at the outset, yeah, is what was the time span of your being on the CJA list with respect to the court and the VI?
So I think I came onto the panel. And I want to say I'm guessing with these times, Your Honor, because I don't have it right in front of me. I want to say they do sort of a call to join the panel in October of each year, maybe. So I think the first year that I signed up for it would have been October of 2014, and then I would have continued on it until February of 2017.
What, Bibas? It's Judge Bibas. Do you have an office at the DeRuzzo firm?
Like a physical,
a room, a desk,
No,
key.
No.
Okay. Do you have access to the physical files in their office? You don't have a key or anything.
You're right. I don't have a key to the building. I couldn't just walk in and open up a file, but I
okay.
If I needed to, I could ask.
Do you have access to the electronic files at the DeRuzzo firm?
Yes, I do. Uh-huh.
So then that would include the file of Arsis Ayala?
Yes, Your Honor. But I want to state that because of Judge Gomez's order, I have not ever accessed that file. But I could.
Okay. Could you tell us what the magistrate in October addressed you regarding screening? Can you tell us what, if anything, was done at that point? Did anything change in your access or access to files or anything else in relation to the firm?
What happened in October, as the record indicates, on October 31st, Attorney DiRusso was in St. Thomas and appeared in front of Judge Gomez for the hearing when Judge Gomez ordered us to consult with the magistrate, Judge Miller, to implement this screening procedure. We had a total of one meeting with Judge Miller, which I believe was actually that same day in the afternoon on October 31st. And nothing of substance was really discussed in that meeting in terms of Attorney DiRusso and I's behavior with respect to the relevant files. Basically, all Judge Miller advised us is she hadn't been at the hearing with Judge Gomez, and she needed to confer with Judge Gomez to figure out sort of what the contours of her obligations were in this scenario, and that she would get back to us. And then we never had another. That was the last discussion of any screening procedure with the court.
I'm sorry, Stephanie. Judge Bevis, did you have a follow up on that? I didn't want.
Yeah, it was just if Judge Gomez were here, and if he were skeptical that whether in fact this is a real relationship, if most of your work is on Brissa Max's cases, et cetera, you'd be working on these cases anyway, you're not getting paid on most of them, et cetera, what would you say in response to him to convince him that this is a real of counsel relationship and not just a name? You don't have a key, you don't have an office, you don't have anything else. If there's virtual access, you haven't been accessing the files, what is it that you'd say that is different from just having an in-house relationship and working with Mr. DiRusso on what are mostly Brissa Max's own cases?
Well, I think it goes to the heart of my professional relationship with Attorney DiRusso. I began practicing law in the Virgin Islands in 2013 with a focus on federal tax litigation in the Virgin Islands, and that's Attorney DiRusso's field. So since 2013, I've worked very closely with Attorney DiRusso, beginning, as I indicated, in October of 2017. Attorney DiRusso and I did have a formal relationship where I was, you know, really working on, I can't say I was working on all of his files. I don't know if I was working on all of his files, but there's a significant number of cases which Attorney DiRusso was bringing me on to work on under the auspices of his firm at that time. Obviously, when I began my position as in-house counsel, I ceased that portion of my relationship with Attorney DiRusso. I was no longer of counsel. I was no longer working on his cases. But we continued to work together very, very closely, and a large part of my responsibilities as in-house counsel go to tax matters, not just litigation tax matters, but general tax matters, with which I confer with Attorney DiRusso on a regular basis. I mean, if it's not daily, it's pretty close to daily that Attorney DiRusso are in contact talking about cases. We don't I don't use his office in Miami. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. I'm so sorry to interrupt, but you said something that piqued my interest. When you talk to Attorney DiRusso on these tax matters that you've just alluded to,
mm-hmm.
May I assume that he earns fees for that time spent with you?
Of course, Your Honor. Yes. Yes, of course.
And those fees are paid by Brissa Max. Is that correct?
We have a whole family of companies that pay various different legal
okay.
fees, but yes, in general, yes, that's correct. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Now, and for the time that you spend, I should say, chatting with Mr. DeRosa on these tax matters, that's in your role as in-house counsel.
Yes, Your Honor, that is correct.
Right. So you don't have any remuneration that you earn from the firm for that consultation.
Correct, Your Honor. Yes.
Okay. I have one other question. On the letterhead of Mr. DeRusso's firm, are you listed as up counsel?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. No, I'm not. I'm not on his letterhead.
Okay. So, tell me if this statement's a reasonable statement. If I was a member of the public looking for tax advice, and I looked up the DeRosa firm, I would not see you listed anywhere on the website, you know, Old School in Martindale or anywhere. I would not see your name listed as of counsel. Because, is that right?
That is correct, Your Honor, yes.
And how can you say you're of counsel? I'm missing something.
Well, so just to sort of, and I'm sorry if I was being a little bit long-winded, but just to sort of finish the describing my relationship with Attorney DeRosa's firm. The other area where I consult with Attorney DeRosa regularly is in the area of criminal defense. And initially when I was appointed to the Belittle matter, as you know, I filed a motion to withdraw that basically said, well, because I'm in-house counsel, I have none of the trappings that are necessary to effectively represent a criminal defendant. And you know, I don't have a mechanism set up to accept fees. I don't have a mechanism set up. I don't have malpractice insurance. I don't have any of these other sort of things that go along with a law practice. And so, in fact, my reassociation with Attorney DeRosa's firm was largely driven by my appointment to the in the Belittle matter. It was largely driven by it. There's a couple other. There's, as I alluded to earlier, there's one other matter where it's sort of convenient for me to be of counsel. But the main thing that I needed was I needed malpractice insurance, which I was not able to secure malpractice insurance without being associated with the firm, because I don't currently have a firm that's active that with which I can acquire malpractice insurance. And I needed access to billing software because I'm not currently set up to bill hourly. So it was a practical issue that drove me to associate with Attorney DeRosa's firm, not really a marketing issue.
How many criminal trials have you participated in as counsel?
In any court anywhere?
Yes.
Probably about 20.
Okay. So you do have experience?
Yes, Your Honor. Mm-hmm.
And when you left when did you start working with the Brizomax?
That would have been in June of 2000. Well, let me caveat that. As in-house counsel in June of 2018, which is, I think, what you're asking, I represented them as outside counsel before that.
So when you were on the CJA panel from October of 2014 to February of 2017, you were not in-house at the Brizomax?
Correct, Your Honor. I was associated with a firm called – I was an associate, I should say, at a firm called Marjorie Rawls Roberts PC during that time.
And when were you first appointed in this case?
That would have been in April of 2019.
Okay, got it. So you started with Brizomax as in-house counsel in June of 2018, which is about 10 months before you were appointed in this case by Judge Gomez.
That is correct, Your Honor, yes.
Okay.
It's Judge Bibas, one follow-up. If this case, if the Belittle case had never come along, would you still have become of counsel with the same relationship?
Well, it's hard to posit on the counterfactual, but again, and I can get into the details if you'd like, but because there is one other matter which is potentially an attorney fee matter. There was other reasons besides the Belil matter for me to associate with Attorney DeRusso's firm.
I mean, let me just talk about the elephant in the room. I mean, the concern is that I thought when I looked at the documents here that you affiliated yourself with the DeRusso firm something like around September of September of 2019 or 2018.
2019. Yes, that's correct. Mm-hmm.
And you filed a motion to the third motion to withdraw 9 days later on September 19. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
So, I mean, the impression one could get, although there's no finding by the district court here, but the impression that one might get is that there's a game being played in order not to be involved with this particular counsel. You affiliate yourself with somebody that you know, and that somebody, by the way, is representing a witness against Mr. Belil in this case, and it looks funky.
Well, I appreciate you just being forthright and putting that question out there, Your Honor. But I understand why it could have that appearance. But all I can say is that was not our intent. That was not my intent. As you know, I indicated in my initial pleading, Attorney DeRusso and I went through this and we went through a formal process of merging files and going through a conflict screen like you would in any sort of regular merger, situation with two attorneys. And it's in that, I had no idea until that point, I don't believe that Attorney DeRusso, well, actually, going back into my records, I realized I had initially been appointed to represent Arcellus Ayala back in 2016, but I had because I actually had a different conflict at that time with the firm that I was at in 2016, and I couldn't represent Arcellus Ayala, but I don't think I knew that Attorney DeRusso was actually appointed to represent Ayala after I was, or if I did know it at the time, I had forgotten it by the time summer of 2019 rolled around and we did our conflicts check, which is the whole point of doing the conflicts check.
But when you were considering merging, I mean, one of the things that we've always gone through, at least in my old firm, if you're trying to bring somebody in, you look at all the things that person's involved with. They look at all the things you're involved with. They try to determine conflicts. Would you have not known before September 10 that DeRusso was representing Ms. Ayala?
Are you asking if I knew prior to sort of making the decision to do this merger if Attorney DeRusso represented Ayala? Am I understanding
correct.
That?
Correct.
I don't think that I did, Your Honor. Because I didn't know. I'm trying to remember when I can't remember when I even learned that Ayala was going to be a witness in the Belil matter.
What was your representation of her in 2016, or possible representation of her in 2016?
Well, for this, it's a related criminal matter.
And
I believe that's how ultimately, she became a witness in this matter is because of that original criminal matter.
Okay.
But that was a situation where I was appointed, filed the motion to withdraw 2 days later, and it was granted. So it was not extensive.
So when did you discover that Mr. DeRusso, definitively discover that Mr. DeRusso was representing Ms. Ayala?
In that intervening period between September 10th and September 20th, when I filed the motion.
Have you or Mr. DeRusso sought any waivers of conflict from Ms. Ayala and Mr. Belil?
I have not sought a waiver of conflict from Mr. Belil. I can't speak to whether Attorney DeRusso has from Ms. Ayala. I'd like to say that Attorney DeRusso and I, despite not having received the guidance that we were expecting from the court, have tried as hard as we can to sort of follow what the court ordered us to do. So we don't actually discuss
Have you informed Mr. Belial of the conflict?
Yes, Your Honor.
And what did he say?
Mr. Belial has been adamant that he does not want me as his attorney.
Okay. All right, well, let's hear from Ms. Edwards, and then we'll get you back on rebuttal, because we've kept you up here for 25 minutes already.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. Meredith Edwards on behalf of the appellee of the United States. Do you have factual questions for me, or did you want me to address the facts that have been elicited?
Well, you can start wherever you'd like. I mean, do you have any question about
What would be your main argument? My main argument is that the court should refrain from extending the collateral order doctrine to permit review of this order at this time. The asserted right at issue is the Sixth Amendment right to effective assistance of counsel, and that is a right that the Supreme Court has expressly held does not fall within the collateral order exception to the final judgment rule.
But what we've got here is a motion to withdraw, which is the Second Circuit has noted in the Barton case, number of cases. Motions to withdraw relate to counsel, not so much to the Sixth Amendment right. I mean, I think you got a good point on the Sixth Amendment because of the Flanagan case. But motions to withdraw relate to counsel. In almost every single case that I can come up with in the civil area, a motion to withdraw meets the collateral order doctrine because it's effective, among other things, effectively unreviewable on appeal. There are few cases in the criminal context, and Second Circuit in Barton says, yes, you can use collateral order doctrine. We've got a muddled history in our court where you've got the Bertoli case, which appears to say you don't necessarily have it in connection with the collateral order doctrine in a case where not counsel didn't want to withdraw. They wanted to stay in but not be there full time as standby counsel. Court refused and forced them to stay in. And then the court says, but it's so important, so dramatic what's going on here, that we're going to enter, of all things, a mandamus to say that the firm can get out of this particular relationship. So I'm not quite sure that we have definitive Third Circuit law.
I would agree. I would say that the fact that in this case, the appellant as the attorney is the one who has raised this claim is not dispositive because the focus is on who that right belongs to, whether that's a party to the underlying action or a non-party. And here it belongs to the criminal defendant. So
your motions to disqualify belong to the criminal defendant. Motions to withdraw belong to the counsel.
Understood, but in this particular case, unlike in Erie, for example, where the attorney was appealing an order denying his withdrawal where he wasn't being paid, and the court looked to the harm that would cause the attorney, here, repeatedly, appellant has couched this action in terms of the harm, the Sixth Amendment violation, that it has on his client, that the order has on his client. So it is not appellant saying, I am asserting this due to concerns that I have about facing ethical violations or sanctions.
Well, Ms. Edwards, I thought that what appellant had done, maybe not artfully, is mesh the two. I know that during the hearing, there was a focus on the Sixth Amendment rights of Mr. Belial, but clearly there was a critical concern, and he articulated it as a motion to withdraw. So it appears that both are being made.
Well, I'd say that the impetus for withdrawing is due to the concern that the representation infringes on it or violates his Sixth Amendment right, his client's Sixth Amendment right to conflict-free counsel. And so I think at the end of the day, the analysis is based on the asserted right at issue. And if that's the case, then it doesn't meet the collateral order doctrine. But even if viewed as appellant asserting his right as an attorney not to represent in this case, then the court should maintain the preferred practice expressed in Bertoli, and that's that of postponing review of an order directed at a non-party until the matter is concluded in the district court or until the party has been held in contempt. Well, I agree that Bertoli did not, in fact, declined to institute a bright-line rule. I think the reasons that the court refrained from extending the collateral order doctrine in that case hold just as much true today in this case.
Well, aren't the words of Bertoli important? I mean, it seemed that the court was specifically saying, this is sui generis. We've got a set of circumstances and facts that are rather unique. We're not going to make contempt be the path that all future litigants have to take. And they, in fact, said we're unwilling to accept a broad principle. We're unwilling to set this as a bright-line rule, a broad principle. Doesn't that mean that we really should set Bertoli apart?
Well, I think, Your Honor, you're exactly right that the words matter. And I would point the court to the wording where the Bertoli court stressed the importance of being especially cautious and using the collateral order doctrine to avoid the general rule requiring contempt, when doing so would make a set of orders that has many members immediately appealable. And because of that, the Bertoli court rightly concluded that extending the collateral order doctrine to permit review of, quote, an order directing the continued provision of litigation services to a client for whom an appearance has been entered in an ongoing case would pose a substantial likelihood of frequently unacceptable delay and substantially interfere with a fair and speedy disposition of many criminal cases. That's exactly
okay, so,
the same here.
Ma'am, it's Judge Bibas. If I could ask you, I think you are right that there are situations in which an existing lawyer trying to withdraw on the eve will delay the trial. And Bertoli says that's at odds with the defendant's interest. Obviously, it's at odds with the government's interest in getting the trial moving. But here we have a situation where the lawyer was trying to withdraw many months before the trial date, where this is not at odds with the defendant's interest, but actually seems to support it. And so I'm having a hard time understanding what the government's interest is in resisting this. Wouldn't the government prefer, at least in these situations far in advance, to have this resolved rather than getting a conviction that's then going to be vulnerable to attack on appeal? I'm having a hard time understanding why Bertoli ought to be read when it said it's not adopting a blanket rule, why it's a good thing for the government or the administration of justice to read it that broadly.
Well, candidly, I think that my position would likely be different if I was concerned that there was an actual conflict. But here, I think it makes sense to insist upon a non-party facing contempt when it appears that there is no conflict but in name. Literally separated by an ocean, you know, at the time appellant's practice was here in the Virgin Islands, for one corporation, DeRuzzo is located in Florida, as explained earlier today, appellant does not share any physical space with the DeRuzzo firm. It is an association for a discrete set of cases where if he wanted to join, knowing that he had this, you know, criminal case, I am sure that he could and would and has enacted measures so that he doesn't access any confidential material related to Ayala, and I'm sure that he doesn't put Belial's files on the shared electronic server.
So essentially what you're doing, you say your position might be different if you thought that there was a actual conflict. So you've, in effect, answered, and that's the way I would have thought of it as well, so I'm not criticizing. You're answering on the merits. rather than on the jurisdictional issue. And on the merits, is there, let's just say, if there was a withdrawal here, when and how would Belial be appointed counsel? What would happen, do you know?
I believe he would be appointed counsel in short order.
Okay.
I know that it's been difficult for the district court to find conflict-free counsel, but I'm sure that the court would find a way and would be able to appoint counsel in short order.
Okay. Judge Greenaway, Judge Bibas?
Nothing further from me.
Nothing. Thank you so much.
No. Thank you. It was very helpful, ma'am.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Golubitsky?
Well, thank you, Your Honor. I guess I'd like to come back to just more fully answering or more fully describing, I guess, an answer to a question that I was posed earlier, which is, if not for this, the fact that I'd been appointed in the Belial matter, what I have associated with Attorney DeRuzzo. And I wanted to highlight, because I probably should have done it before, but I didn't, that there's a number of steps that I took prior to associating with Attorney DeRuzzo to solve the problem. I've been transparent, and it pains me to say it, but it's the truth, which is that I cannot on my own provide competent representation to the defendant in this case, which was the basis of my initial motion to withdraw. And when that initial motion was denied, I took several steps. My first proposal to the court was to say, okay, let me associate with an unconflicted counsel who's not licensed in the Virgin Islands, but who can enter an appearance pro hoc vice with me, and who is an established criminal defense attorney to sort of do a lot of the heavy lifting, because I'm not able to do that. And the court said no, that wouldn't be permitted. And so at that time is when I looked into associating with a firm which is existing in the Virgin Islands to continue on with this representation. And Attorney DeRuzzo is not the only person who I had such a conversation with, but the extent of our relationship outside of the Belial matter is what drove my desire to become associated with Attorney DeRuzzo's firm.
This is Judge Amber, you would be disqualified, in effect, or the idea of having a relationship with the firm in this case would not work because that firm is representing a key witness in the case.
That's correct, Your Honor. So ultimately what I was trying to do didn't work. But nonetheless, I still felt that it was a better outcome than simply not associating with anybody and continuing to provide what I consider to be ineffective assistance.
So you associated, and then you learned, was it only afterwards that you learned about the Aracel Osayala representation?
That's correct, Your Honor, yes. Like I said, it was in that intervening 10-day period between September 10th, when I associated with Attorney DeRuzzo's firm, and September 20th, when I filed the motion with the court.
But if you were looking to, something doesn't make sense. If you were looking to affiliate yourself with somebody that could aid you in this case, you would mention this case, because it's the only case you got in criminal court, to DeRuzzo, and the immediate response back from DeRuzzo would be, oh, wait a minute, we got a problem here because I am representing a key witness in that case, Ms. Ayala.
Yes, Your Honor, I agree with that. The issue is that conversation, unfortunately, only happened after we had formalized the relationship. I guess at that point, we could have undone everything, but we also, there was another, as I indicated, there was another case that was driving this relationship as well. So that was the...
Was that a brief in that case?
Not sort of, Your Honor. It's a class action lawsuit it's actually a Section 1983 lawsuit that's going on in in district court in the Virgin Islands, but it's not something which I'm currently being compensated for, I guess you would say. It's something which I'm being permitted to do by Brisamax that I'm working on with Attorney DeRuzzo. So it's not really a Brisamax case. Brisamax is not a client.
So what makes you, go ahead. I'm sorry, Judge Greenwood, you finish up.
No, I was just going to say thank you. Go ahead.
Okay. If you have had experience in 20 criminal matters,
mm-hmm.
and I can remember back when I was a young associate, a partner would be appointed in a case, in a criminal case, and it would dump it down on me. And I would go off the court and represent someone. And I didn't have the experience that you had, which is involvement in 20-some criminal matters. What would make you incompetent to represent Mr. Belial?
Well, it's not having to do with my ability to go into court and represent him, but there's a lot of representing, you know, defendants in a criminal matter that you know, you do outside of a courtroom. And I don't have, for example, I simply don't have an office where it's appropriate for me to meet with witnesses. I don't, or with the defendant. I have a LexisNexis subscription, but as I indicated, I don't have billing software. I don't have anything that you would normally associate with, you know, being an attorney in a law firm. You know, and so it's that lack of infrastructure. I think that I don't have a relationship right now with an investigator. None of these things I think are necessary to provide effective representation in a criminal matter, and I don't have them.
Are you involved in any other criminal matters currently in the VI or elsewhere?
No, Your Honor.
Okay, I have no further questions.
I don't either.
Okay.
I have nothing further. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you, both counsel. I would ask that a transcript be prepared of this oral argument. And Ms. Edwards, if you would mind just having the government pick that up, if you would, please. Is that a problem
sure,
for
yeah.
you? If it's a problem, we can split it. But if the government wouldn't mind picking it up.
Sure, Your Honor.
Thank you very much, and thank you to everybody. And we'll take the matter under advisement.